Disclaimer. The following two-hour argument was recorded from the hours of 10:30 in the evening to 12:30 in the morning. Well, enjoy.
Okay, joining me now, a lot of people know this guy. He dresses in a V for Vendetta costume and delivers panels on Neon Genesis Evangelion at East Coast conventions. Welcome, V guy. I don't really know what to call you.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Oh, come
I'm
on.
Man of wealth and taste.
Okay.
I run the AVA panels at New York Anime Fest.
Yes, you do. Okay. But that's not really why you're here. You wanted to talk a little bit about anime exposure on television.
Yeah, I really want to talk with you seriously today, Zach, because this is a major problem we're facing. That really, there was a lot of anime on Adult Swim during the anime boom. And you saw how little it dropped off to. I mean, early 2008, what did they do? Regulate Code Geass to a 5 a.m. death slot on Sunday mornings? There isn't much anime on TV anymore. And I really think this is one step in the entire system without which it'll all eventually fall apart. Where do new fans come from? They come from running things on TV. And look, I don't expect there to be marathons of 6 episodes of new stuff a night, but you need 1 or 2 new things. And a couple of months ago, you were talking with the Genion representative around last December.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to be realistic here because he said running Samurai Champloo on TV only resulted in 10% DVD sale increase.
Okay.
That wasn't, and he didn't consider that significant. Relative to what? I mean, during the boom years, ADV and Genion were posting annual revenue increase of 20%. 20% was unnatural if the boom years were an unnatural boom. Even though running stuff on TV only gets you 10% growth, that's kind of as fast as growth is ever going to go. It's not like it's going to triple within a single year. And look, I know it's, oh, ha, ha, we want free anime on TV. Yes, the lifeblood is always going to be the home video release. And the stuff you put on TV is always an extended commercial for the DVDs. But it's where the new fans come from. Thankfully, Funimation is recognized. It doesn't have to be anything great. Just, you know, like, get Dragon Ball Z Kai on TV to make new young fans. And it's not all going to be Ghost in the Shell standalone complex, much as I'd like it to be. I'd like Eden of the East to get on TV. I mean, Adult Swim said we're going to have 3 new shows in 2010. What did we get? Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood and Kekkaichi. And we're supposed to get a 3rd one. I haven't seen it. Still, I'm coming at this from 2 angles. On the one hand, you need to run stuff on TV. On the other hand, it's going to be popular stuff. So some people are saying Bleach and Naruto, those aren't real fans. Relative to what? I mean, when the anime industry was starting in the 1980s, what was everyone watching? Speed Racer and Robotech. A lot of the voice actors say, I got into this because I was 17 and watching Robotech as a teenager. Now suddenly you're saying some teenager watching Naruto isn't a real fan. They're where you were 20 years ago. So, on the one hand, yes, they will try and run a lot of ninja stuff like Bleach or Naruto, but this is what's needed to keep the numbers up. You need to keep running stuff on TV to maintain this healthy environment for growing new anime fans, or eventually you're not going to make any more. I mean, where do you think they come from? Are there, like, I think a lot of the industry is driven by the handful of collectors who come to a convention and literally dump $1,000 on the trade floor in a single day. While these hardcore collectors of, like, obscure moe stuff from Japan do pump more money in, I mean, every single new fan isn't going to be a collector, just as every single thing you license isn't going to be the next Ava or the next Cowboy Bebop. You can't measure it as a collector's market. If you think of it as a collector's market, it's never going to be anything more than a collector's market. You need to think of it as a popular entertainment industry and start branching it out.
Okay,
so companies aren't foolish, and thankfully, like, Funimation is doing online streaming stuff and trying to put stuff on TV. That is part of what stable growth is, and I understand they have, like, no money left. And it might have reached a point where they can't afford too much as they'd like to, but it's what keeps the entire system running.
Right. So what you're talking about is expanding what has fallen into absolutely a niche industry into a mainstream sort of juggernaut. Is that sort of what you're talking about? You know, sort of back to the year, you know, 2001, 2002, when, you know, well, Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! Were king, and Pokemon the movie opened. Remember,
the boom years were a boom and were unnatural, but, you know...
It was a bubble. Specifically, it was a bubble. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a bubble, but in case you couldn't tell, I was into heavily into comics and graphic novels fandom for a while, and they had their own crash in the mid-90s. Of course, they didn't have digital downloading then, but it was another speculation, the big comics crash of 93. And they did basically the same thing where they went through a boom and bust cycle. And I see many parallels, and that you just have to retrench around a handful of popular titles. But ultimately what saved the industry was the live-action X-Men movie. And then the subsequent other remakes of live-action movies. So I really think that apart from running stuff on TV, I'm sorry to get a little divergent here, like just as Akira, the anime movie, kind of, they say, started the North American anime market in 1988, a well-done live-action Akira movie would make an live-action Akira movie would really reboot the entire industry. Maybe Cowboy Bebop, if they can get it done right. A couple of other titles are out there, like Battle Angel Alita. If you can make live-action adaptations, that's the one thing that can penetrate into the public consciousness and use the comic book movies as the functional parallel there. For the paradigm model you're looking to emulate.
Well, I think there's a little flaw in your logic here. And yes. The flaw is that X-Men, the first X-Men movie, while, you know, that was sort of the spark that started the superhero movie revolution and the, you know, the big resurgence of comic book films, you are talking about franchises that are legacy American properties. These are all American superheroes that people, you know, 60, 70, 80 years old grew up with. You know, most of the superhero franchises launched in the 40s, 50s. You're talking about...
Building fan base.
Yeah, sure. Not just a built-in fan base, but a culture, part of the cultural memory. So you have seniors going to see the Spider-Man movie because they remember Spider-Man from when they were teenagers or even younger. That's not the same with anime. Not at all.
There's much truth to that, but then again, a lot of things like even Lord of the Rings, despite being a popular book series, people didn't think, there were serious worries at first. Could this penetrate in the public consciousness when a lot of people haven't heard of it? And then that turned into a major movie series.
Well, okay. Lord of the Rings, again, part of American consciousness. It was really popular in the 60s.
It was still a popular book, I understand.
My parents were just as excited to see Lord of the Rings as I was, you know, and my parents were hippies. So it's, you know, these are parts of American consciousness. Akira, I think, is the closest you can get to capturing, you know, an audience that existed 20 years ago.
No, I'm not saying make a dozen live action. Like, literally just focus on Akira and Cowboy Bebop. Make sure you get it right. Get your foot in the door.
I don't completely disagree with you. However, with television, which was your original point.
Yeah,
here,
let's get back to that.
With television, the problem is that obviously television consumption is not the same now as it was even 5 years ago, as it was even 10 years ago. And so television consumption is totally different. And the reason, like, you know, you're talking about past television successes, Pokemon, Dragon Ball, even Cowboy Bebop. When Cowboy Bebop first premiered on Adult Swim, there was no Adult Swim fix. You couldn't go on to AdultSwim.com and watch their shows. You couldn't go on to Crunchyroll and watch anime. You know, the best you could do was download it. But even back then, you know, Dragon Ball was such a huge permeating success because they stripped it on weekday afternoons when kids would actually come home and there wasn't anything to do but watch TV. They didn't have the internet. They didn't have their cell phone. They didn't have whatever. You know, that's why television was such a huge success back then. But that's not the way people consume entertainment anymore. It's certainly not the way kids or teenagers consume entertainment. So getting television exposure, I don't think really has the same impact as it used to.
It really doesn't, and you have to take that into account, and it'll probably impact how much money they're willing to spend relative to the number of eyeballs they're going to get on screen. Nonetheless, like, in terms of, look, people who really, really want the next Naruto episode or One Piece from overseas or something, they're going to hack into the A&N service to get it ahead of time or something. You know, the people that really want it are going to go and get it all on the internet. A handful will go and try and find it through legal streaming. Nope. People who are randomly flicking channels who never would have bought anime or even watched it before.
Actually, the numbers
off the TV.
The numbers don't really support you there. Naruto downloading has actually really cut off since it's been made available through almost, you know, through a lot of different territories, through Crunchyroll, through a number of streaming services. Once they made it legal and easy to get to, suddenly the torrents are not as popular as they used to be. Definitely not as popular as they used to be. So,
conversely, it might be moving towards a hybrid system where, like, at what point is, like, a TV channel going to merge with the internet? We keep saying that's going to happen. I mean, I watch Adult Swim Fix a lot more than I ever used to, possibly because there was that month-long period when Code Geass was just on the Adult Swim Fix and on nothing else for a while. I think they did that on purpose to get people to use the website more. I don't know.
No, that was because they were wasting airtime on Code Geass because no one was watching it. That thing
it's so cool. It's this guy in a costume leading a rebellion with mechs.
Right. But no one was really watching it, so they had to yank it.
Wasn't him that was wrong, it was the world.
Right. So I don't think television exposure is really necessarily the next big
It'll
thing.
It'll never have as big impact as it used to have.
No, absolutely not. I really don't think so.
I'm not saying there needs to be a lot, just one or two new things, and I'm more worried about that period like 2 years ago when everything dropped off. You need to have something on.
Well, sure, and they still do. Like, there's still a few things. They're not super popular on the internet, but people are definitely watching them. I know Kakashi's doing okay on Adult Swim. It's doing well enough to stay on the air.
Doing well enough to stay on the air, but it's just
that's a lot for an anime
on TV just to get more random fans in. And I don't think they can support this well enough anymore, and it doesn't really pull in the numbers anymore. But without that, is it going to switch back to, hey, wow, it's a college club system where people bring in stuff you know that then show you samplers that they've downloaded, and hey, let's go watch this and buy it?
Well, the thing is, no one really knows what the future of what the future is really going to be. What you're talking about is sort of a return to the way things were during the bubble. And we're in a completely different place now. We're on a new frontier. I don't really know what the next 10 years are going to be like. I couldn't tell you if it's never going to go. I'll tell you right now, it's never going to go back to college clubs. People went to college clubs because they couldn't find it anywhere else. They couldn't see it anywhere else.
I went for the social interaction.
Okay, right, but
as like-minded anime fans, not because I needed to buy the stuff. Okay. There's always going to be clubs for things, but you know what I mean. Yeah.
Right, but the number of people showing up to an anime club is much for social activities is much smaller than the number of people showing up because they couldn't get it anywhere else. The minute digital, I was in an anime club through the transition from VHS fan subs to DVD to digital download. Literally, that's when I was a big part of an anime club. We saw our attendance the minute digital fan subs became ubiquitous and the university got broadband. Our attendance dropped off by like 70% because people didn't need to come to us to get it anymore. We were a supplier, effectively. So college clubs, it's never going to go back to that. You know, anime conventions are the place where people socialize, you know, about anime now, for the most part.
I understand, and really, you're right, neither of us has the answers. The models are outdated, and putting stuff on TV on Adult Swim or Sci-Fi Channel or whatever really wouldn't have the impact it does before. But I'm really afraid that they're getting too niche. It's not just put stuff on TV, it's also, I'm on here for a couple reasons, it's also people make fun of, oh, the only thing on TV is Bleach, and teenagers watch it. Well, as opposed to what, moe stuff that gets imported from Japan that only adults are buying? And, you know, it's this big thing, like, you remember the Providence Anime Conference?
Mm-mm.
Neither do I. That's because they marketed, it was in 2008, they marketed it as the 21-plus anime convention. I assumed it was a hentai convention because that's all the ad said. And it was the most insane thing I've ever heard. Are you familiar with the expression, play to fiddle while Rome burned? It's like during the 2008 crash, when things were crazy, when companies were dropping out of the sky, madness, they had this tiny convention where they said, we're only going to invite over 21 people because all the teenage Naruto and Bleach and Code Geass fans, they're too rowdy. You know, they mess up the old con scene of the 90s. That convention was a disaster. I contacted the guy who ran the dealers for the people that set it up. They didn't break even. They lost money on this conference. Everyone who was there, Funimation, ADB, academics, a lot of people went there and said it was such a great idea. And, like, they thought 1,200 people had come. Barely 300 came, something along those lines. Numbers-wise, not enough people came. So the younger fan base is here to stay. A big thing that happened in my New York Anime Fest panel, I make a stray joke about, yeah, they think it's a parody video, and someone says, damn it, the conventions are just full of new fans. They're nothing but Narutards. And the weird thing was, like, disproportionately how much people laugh at that. Like, for 30 seconds, the room just dissolves into peals of laughter. Just at, like, you call us Narutards, we're fans too. That people are really sensitive about that. That these are the new shows that the younger fans are watching right now. The ninja stuff. 20 years ago, it was Robotech and Star Blazers, and I don't see what the difference is. There's a big gap between older, experienced fans and new, younger fans coming in. And we really need to support them instead of saying, oh, they're like this plague that's coming in messing up the conventions and they don't buy as much because they're teenagers.
Well, but
I think that, because that's where the armies are coming from.
The schism that you're talking about only happens on the internet. And even then, it's very marginal. You're talking about a tiny little argument that happens in a few forums. The fact that convention attendance continues to grow, and that you can see demonstrably that the convention population is mostly teenagers, I think they're pretty much winning that fight. If you're saying that we should embrace these kids and say, hey, come on in and check out this show from the 90s, you might have a point, but you sort of dress this in a sensibility that's very dramatic, and you're talking about a tiny little argument. It's very small.
I don't think it's that tiny, because it's really affecting how the cons are setting up. Why do you think there's such a big divide between the fan-run joke panels? And, like, a big complaint I've seen at multiple conventions is the panels that were actually a mature look at the works of Mamoru Oshii or Tezuka are, like, in a corner somewhere and get not that many people there. And obviously because they're older things, but why isn't that kind of academic attention or serious, I call it fan infrastructure. That it's not just let's come and make jokes about our characters in role-playing, but serious discussion. I mean, like, a lot of the Gundam is just a kid's show on a certain level, but it can also be about politics. A lot of new shows coming out, like Code Geass, yeah, there's a lot of humor in there, but that's actually not an example. But you know what I mean, that you could watch it as just a show, and then you could have someone come along and explain, well, this is what it's about, this is what the creator intended, or this is how we can interpret it, even. A lot of conventions I saw is just like there were how to cosplay as characters from new shows, and all the... I'm not going to say intelligent. It's like there's a brain drain, where there isn't much leadership for the younger fans, and the entire style of that fandom doesn't really have much guidance, and I think that's why it's falling apart, or it's hard to organize things.
But what you're talking about is a
fundamental... That's what I'm trying to say here.
I get it, but what you're talking about is a fundamental difference between young people and older people. And by older people, I mean people in their mid to late 20s, early 30s, and people in their teens, which is the divide at an anime convention. So you're talking about... Hang on, let me finish.
Yeah.
Of course, when you're 16 and you're at a party weekend with your buddies at an anime convention, you want to go to the How to Survive a Zombie Apocalypse panel. That's what you want to do. You want to try to figure out how to get a little rum in your Coke when you're 17. That's what you want to do. You're not there to have some guy and his 28-year-old dude preach to you about the academic qualities of Dirty Pair. You're not there for that. Like, that's the big divide at an anime convention. What you're saying is we don't have leadership to guide these teenagers to suddenly start appreciating that shit. They're not there for that. That's not what they're there for. They're there to laugh at stupid, quote unquote comedy anime music videos. They're there to watch The Masquerade. They're just there to have a good time. You know, the old timer fans, they're the ones that are there to sort of sit around amongst themselves and discuss, the serious implications of the anime series they are. But even then, even among older anime fans, they don't even really go to those panels. Like, the stuffy nature of them is their very nature is kind of a turnoff. It's a little bit of a turn away. When you're on vacation, you're just trying to have a good time. You're not really there for that.
The noobs can be great people, Zach. They wish to be. All they lack is the light to show them the way.
Are you suggesting that they're not great people because they don't really want to sit in on an academic discussion of Mamoru Oshii films?
I'm saying that if you're not provided with the resources to understand any of this, how would they? I mean, most of this stuff is in Japanese or not available to them. A lot of the people at my panels, I'm not even lecturing them. I'm just saying basic things about, oh, this is kind of what they meant by this. It's how to make learning fun. That's what we have to underscore. I mean, like, Tolkien fandom, Lord of the Rings. Yeah, a lot of people watch it for the fight scenes. And no, not everyone was watching it to know how it's a great commentary on all the Icelandic Eddas and Beowulf and stuff. But it kind of rubbed off on the mainstream fans that, oh, it's kind of like about the characterization and the themes of love and war and, like, Tolkien's thoughts on World War One and morality. These higher concepts were able to get these across to people. They were able to make learning fun and have some higher principles in there to a degree.
Right. And do you think if you ran a Lord of the Rings convention and you ran a panel on Aragorn, Legolas, Yaoi, slash fic versus the themes of World War One in Lord of the Rings?
That's
which,
what I'm saying the problem is. And if
you think the problem is there?
It's that we have this divide where we think of, like, anime fandom has to be this either-or of this extreme end of fan fiction, cosplay, joke panel, versus at the other end, a really serious academic lecture. We need to be able to find a middle ground. Other fandoms can find a middle ground in this and still attract a significant fan base. This is dividing the fandom. It is not promoting healthy growth. You need to be able to find a way to impart these new ideas on incoming fans. To actively promote, hey, we're going to have incoming fans around. We should tell them why the show is cool instead of it's more cannon fodder for AMVs. Mainstream sci-fi fandoms have been able to do this.
That's true. Certainly that's true. However, mainstream sci-fi fandom doesn't really pull in a lot of kids. Especially like you go to a Star Trek convention or a Stargate convention. It's mostly people in their 30s, 40s. You know, maybe they have kids that are there in costumes, but there's no teenagers at those things. At least, certainly not a lot. Not as much as you see at an anime convention, for sure.
There's a lot of truth to what you're saying, but I think it's a problem where we've got one or two academic conferences like Schoolgirls in Mobile Suits in Minnesota, which attract a few hundred people, versus the entire con circuit. But we need to have an educated and informed fan base, and we need to do this. And no one's going to do it for us. We need to build the fandom infrastructure, or it's never going to happen.
Okay, so I'm having a difficult time understanding exactly what it is you're proposing here. Are you suggesting that there is something fundamentally broken about the fact that an anime convention serves multiple audiences?
I'm suggesting that anime is a very young fandom, barely 20 years, and most of the people more or less in charge, at least in the industry, have been around since it started. Compare that to comics, the comics industry, which is around for like 80 years. We never really developed the apparatus to go, there's going to be new fans coming in, and, oh, we need to explain things to them. Even Lord of the Rings, they understood there's going to be this great influx of fans, the OneRing.net and people like them. We need to have introduction panels that aren't just jokes, but saying these are not a lecture. I mean, it was just a basic gloss of these are kind of the basic themes of the thing. These are what the characters are like, and they could make it fun. And they understood, because it was Lord of the Rings fans have been around for decades, as is comics, we need to keep explaining it to new, younger fans. Anime fandom never really had to deal with a new generation of people coming in. This is why it's having so many problems adapting to these younger fans. Why there is this huge divide at conventions between the joke panels or the cosplay fan activities and the serious stuff. I think we can have both. The first step is thinking you can.
Okay. Now, I think I get what you're saying here.
If you treat the noobs like ignorant animals, that's all they're ever going to be.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's tough to reconcile the fact that they want what they want, and they're getting what they want. The internet's made everything very egalitarian. It's not like they can't just watch whatever it is they want to watch. Be exposed to whatever it is they want to be exposed to. The fans that you're going to get in the room for an Evangelion panel, for example, are yes. people who are already interested in the show, already know everything you're going to be talking about. You know, that sort of thing. Consumption has changed so much.
Well, then there's the assumption, which other people have made, which I really don't agree with, that everyone coming to the panel now came to my EVA panel last year. I don't do that. I go, you know, obviously I moved to a new town in the past year, but even at, like, my local con where I've done the same panel more than once in the same location, I don't like to assume that everyone has been there before. Maybe they were off doing something else. The other thing you have to consider is that, you said it before, there's so much competition for other entertainment venues that maybe they were off Herculoids? What do you call that thing?
What? Herculoids?
That old animal. It was in that AKB48 podcast. There's a guy talking about it.
Oh, I have no idea what you're referring to. Toho?
Vocaloids, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. That's not a game. That's an idle.
Maybe they're off playing Vocaloids. Maybe they were spending their time watching another show. There's physically so much time they can spend watching anime in a given day. I mean, one of the problems we have is there could never be a hit like Ava or even Cowboy Bebop were back in the day, because originally there was one hit and literally every anime fan bought it. Now, there can never be a hit where even like really big series like Death Note, there's people who've never seen it because there's only so much time they can physically spend watching things.
Well, there's no such thing as a... Well, hang on. There's no such thing as a hit that everyone's seen anymore anyway. I mean, you want to reach back into the days when 48 million people or whatever watched the finale of MASH, but even huge cultural successes like Mad Men pull in like a 3.3 million, you know, it's like a 3.3 on Nielsen. There's no such thing as those huge successes anymore. I get what you're talking about. I get what you're talking about, but what you're talking about are successes in the world of anime, and we haven't really had one of those since, I guess, the first Full Metal Alchemist. We really haven't had one since then.
Now, that's what I'm talking about.
That's up to Japan.
let me get my thought out. It's if you can't have a big hit like that anymore than 100% of the people watched, you can't say, well, everyone may have seen Ava because maybe half the people there didn't see it because there's physically, they were, instead of one hit a year, there's five big hits. Not everyone can watch five series in a year because they're too busy. There's so much competition for entertainment now with, of course, video game platforms, World of Warcraft, what have you, that maybe they just haven't come to see that series yet. And people come to cons sometimes to browse.
Okay, I understand what you're saying, but you're sort of attacking a problem from a completely different... your strategy is totally different from what generally most people agree on, which is Japan just hasn't produced a series that hits with the West like it, you know, since the days of Death Note, Full Metal Alchemist, which also happened during the bubble. There just hasn't been a show yet. I mean, brain drain is really the big problem most people seem to point to. Not necessarily fan apathy. It's not like there's some magic show out there that people just haven't seen. It's that there is no new show. And you're talking about a fundamentally, like you said, a fundamentally young fan base that wants to see something new. They don't want to be reintroduced to something really old. They want to see something new, and there is nothing new that's that much of a crowd pleaser. We're not seeing it. So
we are indeed truly in the middle of a big creative slump in Japan, and I can only hope that even the moe has run out and they're finally getting off their asses and being forced to think creatively and make new things. I have real hope in that, I can't pronounce it, Noi Tanime Midnight Block, the one that had Eden of the East on it, where they actually try experimental stuff again.
Right. Well, they've been doing that for a while.
Yeah, a big part is we're dependent on what's coming out of Japan, and stuff coming out of Japan ain't that great at the moment.
Well, right now,
it comes in all sorts of forms. Like, who could have predicted Hetalia? Hetalia is mind-blowingly good, and it's become a national sensation.
In Japan.
Have you seen how many people got... The first Ava panel I did in 2008, before this thing was even licensed, the thing before me was this group of, like, 20 girls sitting at a panel calling each other by country names, and when I was setting up, I went, what is this for? And they said, oh, it's this new show called Hetalia. It's amazing. There's this groundswell at the conventions anyway. There's a lot of Hetalia love going on.
Right.
I mean, it's not all going to be yet another Moe show or yet another action show. It might be, well, Eden of the East was very creative, or even Black Butler. We might see hits in different areas.
There's always going to be successes. But in terms of shows that actually make turn a profit for the companies that are releasing them, for that actually reach, you know, the shows that find merchandise, you know, creeping into Hot Topics and stuff like that, which is a different category from what you're talking about. You're talking about successes that are successes relative to the world of anime as it exists in 2010. What we were talking about before were television successes that actually sold comic books, sold merchandise, sold t-shirts, sold all kinds of crap. Fullmetal Alchemist, Death Note, you know, stuff like
not,
that.
Not necessarily a mega hit. I'm just saying, like, it is a good thing that they are running Kekkaishi on Adult Swim.
Sure.
This is what I would be asking for. That, yes, it is not the next Death Note. It is not the next big mega hit. But if you weren't running any anime, 5-10 years down the line, how many younger teenagers would still be growing up into adults that are anime fans? You need to start the process when they're young. Otherwise, a graying of anime fandom will set in.
Well, here's what I would argue is the bigger problem.
Yeah.
Here's the bigger problem. We have a generation of teenagers and a whole generation of even college kids now that have grown up consuming anime. Certainly they consume it. But they have learned that it is not worth any money, and paying for it is a waste of money. And when they outgrow it, when they're done with it, they were never constructive parts of the fandom. They were never constructive contributors to the economy of the whole thing. We have a whole generation of people who just consume it because they can, because it's because quote unquote anime is free. That's the bigger thing that we're fighting here. Not so much the notion that there isn't a big show everyone can get behind financially and fandom wise, but the bigger problem I think is that people, younger generations, you know, people in their teens and 20s, anime is not something you pay for, and that's been bred in to anime fandom over the years, for sure. I think that.
That is a problem that will not get over quickly, but part of that was that they bred it in. They tried to make it a collector's market. They wanted us paying $200 for a box set of Read or Die from Aniplex or something. And by the way, when I was at New York Anime Fest, it was frightening seeing how much they expected people to pay for some of these things. I was saying to myself, a teenager could never pay that much for a Blu-ray box set of something that expensive.
And they're not aiming that at teenagers, though.
Yeah, they're aiming it at the collectors. But then why were there so many screaming girls at the panels for Black Butler, Durarara? Things that Aniplex was sitting over people's shoulders, their little representative was on hand to say, hi, we're Aniplex. Here's our thing. It's really expensive. Because if we have Sony running everything, Aniplex is going to turn into Bandai Visual all over again. And how did that work out? Well, I mean, didn't that prove that a collector's market isn't what it is anymore, that it has to be a popular consumption market?
Okay, I guess I can see what you're trying to say, but the problem with Bandai Visual...
There are problems.
The issue with Bandai Visual is that they were trying to expand a market with these releases, and what the lesson that everyone learned from Bandai Visual is you do these things in very limited numbers. You're selling a $200 Read or Die Blu-ray box. How many of these do we print before we decide that, you know, we're spending too much money on it? So the question is how you sell it, where you sell it. You're not trying to put it in stores. Bandai Visual is putting things in Best Buy locations. You know, it's all about business strategy. You're talking about minutiae here.
And on a long enough time scale, that led ultimately to a small group of fans dominating the industry and ultimately pandering. Why do you think the Moe craze happened? They stopped caring about, oh, what's the mainstream think on TV? It was what were the hardcore collectors thinking, and this didn't ultimately work.
Whoa, hang on. No, that's not at all true. The Moe thing happened because it made money. And it was, for a long time, it was keeping anime studios open for business and creating new shows and selling a hell of a lot of merchandise. That's why it kept going. This is a business. It's an entertainment business. It's not really that different from Hollywood. They create what makes money. So it's not like they were just saying, what do the hardcore fans want? It's, what do the hardcore fans buy? That's what they were interested in, and still are.
They've kind of gone to the well a few many times.
And oh, for sure. They, for sure.
Like, the thing I'm, oh, haha, it's so progressive, really, like, I don't think they've been, like, marketing anime to girls really aggressively for a while, like, or new markets or younger people. It's all, how can we sell more Gundam kits?
Well, they're desperate. The economy in Japan is just as shit as it is here. They have to keep their doors open. And what do otaku buy? They buy the moe shit. So that's what they're producing. I mean, we've been over this a number of times on the show.
Look, I am just a guy. I don't have an easy answer for all these things. I don't know what to do about the recession and the kids running crazy in the street at the panels and the Russians and all this crazy stuff. What I know is that first you have to get mad. Say, I'm a consumer, damn it. I'm an anime fan and I don't deserve to be treated this way. I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. I'm going to take matters into my own hands. The first step is no one is going to come and help us. And sorry to preachify here, but really, if you want to try and help bridge the gap of fandom, that whole thing, there's a handful of people talking about it as like a really hardcore lecture, and another half talking about let's do cosplay. You have just a few ideas about, this show had some nice themes, and I'd like to talk about it, but it was also really funny, and I like to make jokes too. Like the way Star Wars or Wondering.net and Lord of the Rings fandom are handled. Volunteer panels at your own local convention if you think you can do a good job. Because odds are there's a lot of openings now because there's a real brain drain. Get out and take matters into your own hands. Otherwise, we're taking orders from people who are living 10 to 20 years ago and think it's still going on like that. But instead of vilifying the noobs, we should be trying to, and new fans, we should be trying to help them out or turn them into better fans. Like, how are there going to be anything more than kids screaming, running around in cosplay with those goddamned internet memes and not really buying things? How do you get, like, there's this one thing I'm, did you go to Katsucon?
No.
There's this thing where, like, one of the people at the Funimation panel said, yeah, we really need to teach the kids that you're supposed to buy it on DVD, and that's the right way to buy anime. Well, they didn't really outline how. Like, how do you get them to know you're supposed to watch it that way? I didn't hear specifics to their plan of how to get them to watch it that way, which is confusing.
Well, I mean, yeah, that Funimation is interested in selling that line because that helps their bottom line, and certainly...
No, I mean, just in general, like, how would we... A whole new wave of collectors that spend a lot of money aren't going to come out of the woodwork. It's going to take a lot of work on the ground level all over the place. You know, people like you, people like me, you know, just everyday average Joes, work hard at your local anime con and try and make it turn out better. Try to make it more accessible to people. Try to make it a bit more than just internet memes and a bit more accessible than hardcore academic journals. Try and get as many people in as possible. If we're going to make it work again, it has to be the strength that helped build anime fandom in the first place. People built this thing importing stuff that they couldn't even translate in the 80s. And look how far they got.
Well, okay, those people also opened their own business. And, you know, you're ignoring a lot of things. You're sort of saying that, like, the circumstances we have now are fundamentally the same as they were in the early 90s. Things have changed so much.
No,
you're talking...
Not,
what, you're
I'm
also...
Saying
hang
drive,
on. You're also talking about fundamental changes in the entertainment industry as a whole, not just in anime, but as a whole. You go to a Comic-Con, well, not even Comic-Con, because Comic-Con, the average age of an attendee is like 23 or something like that. But if you go to any large gathering of teenagers and you ask them, how many DVDs did you buy last month?
No, I agree.
The answer
fully.
Is like nothing, like zero.
I didn't mean it that way. I was making a bad analogy, like during today with the recession when they go, you know, our forefathers got their way through the Great Depression, and if they had that strength to rebuild, so can we. I was just saying, you know, if the strength and ingenuity that built anime fandom once could work, so can we. You know, even though it's an entirely different set of situations, albeit the Great Recession and the Great Depression or the current crisis and the other things. Sci-fi and fantasy and anime fans have been able to make so many amazing things in terms of fan networks, fan-made guides to things, built from the ground up. And it could be done before, and it can be done again. You just have to realize, like, help isn't coming. And I don't know how good of a plan it is to just wait for the next big hit.
So
on the other hand, we can't just build hits around crazy, stupid, run-of-the-mill shows, but one of those things that sold 100 units, like Heat Guy J. Sorry, I was so excited I had to say it. Please don't cut me off.
It's fine. It's fine. You have some interesting ideas. It's just they seem a little, I think you're arguing from a place of idealism, which is it's nice, but anime is one of those fields where I don't think you can make it like it used to be, and I don't think you can force the current mass audience, which is mostly teenagers, to behave like the fans used to. I don't think you can ever really do that. And I don't think any amount of education would really make that happen.
When Tolkien fandom was nothing but anti-Vietnam hippies in 1960s American college campuses who had no idea what it was about, and no one thought that American fans could ever be educated. Tolkien himself said, "They're the deplorable cultists. They don't understand this show. They like it for the wrong reasons. They just make what their version of cosplay and fanfic was. This could never be anything." But over the period of decades, just fans who were writing their own guidebooks, not academic even, just like Tom Shippey and Karen Wynn Fondstad, people making things like just maps for guidebooks, like the maps of Middle Earth, just fans who, you know, ascended fanboys who wrote their own guides, tried to set up their own fan organizations, local groups and things like the Mythopic Society, and eventually this turned into something. I'm not saying there's a magic bullet, and I am not saying it will happen in a year or two, but it is a fundamental problem with the system. I think a major problem with it is vilifying younger fans, and this is just because we're a younger fan that's only like 20 years old. We're not used to bringing in new people, and I think we need to at least be running a few new shows on TV. And I think that running Bleach and Kekkaishi, which I don't like that much, that's just a matter of personal taste, two new shows every Saturday, that's more or less pretty good given the economy at the moment, and it's bringing in new fans. And stay the course. This is a good idea. We were in a bad spot 2 years ago, but Dragon Ball Z Kai on TV and Bleach, Kekkaishi, I wish like Eden of the East was on, but they need to keep doing that, because if they don't, the system will fall apart.
Okay, well, that's an interesting take on it. I think it's important to have anime on TV. However,
yes, I'm an idealist.
As the entire entertainment industry goes, the value of television eyeballs has decreased so much that
it's a long commercial.
Well, for sure.
Whole purpose of a commercial is to hook people who haven't heard of it before.
Right, it's just the chances that anyone's susceptible to not already knowing what anime is or not being familiar with it, who is flipping through channels at that exact time. It's just these numbers are dramatically dwindling.
When I started out, I absolutely hated anime. I was randomly flicking channels, and I landed on the first episode of Neon Genesis Evangelion, randomly flicking channels, and I landed on it when it was running on Giant Robot. And then I watched it off Adult Swim. I got into all this because stuff was running on TV.
Okay, and how long ago was that?
Since I actually started regularly watching things, about 5 years.
About 5 years. And how much has TV watching changed in those 5 years?
Well, because they're not running as much good stuff.
Well, no. I would argue in the last 5 years, television watching has changed so dramatically that the landscape is completely different.
Let me make it clear. Even some sort of deal where you ran anime on the Adult Swim website media player, not on TV itself. So, you know, something that was obviously they could count how many eyeballs are watching. I'm not sure, like their Hulu or something. Not just Funimation.com, because people who know about anime are already going to Funimation.com. Like, put it on other video players. You know, like, this is how TV is transitioning into iTunes and Hulu, okay? The way, you know, like, TV won't be the same in 20 years.
Okay, right, but a lot of the
Maybe
stuff you're talking
put it
about...
Online. I don't know.
A lot
but
of the stuff...
People who are can't just put it where people who are looking for it will find it. You have to put it somewhere where casual fans just looking for entertainment might thumb through it.
But a lot of that stuff is on Hulu. A lot of the stuff you're talking about is on Hulu. It's already there. It's just not on the front page because that's where Family Guy goes.
Yeah, and you need to organize it better or something. Hulu's changing all the time. You have to find a way to appeal to newer casual fans. You can't just keep going back to the well.
All right, okay. I think I get your point, but the question that I really have to ask you is, what is with the V costume? Why do you do that?
Oh, well, the first time I just, you know, the movie came out, so I, you know, I got a costume. And I went to a convention just to cosplay, right? And you remember, like, right after Genion collapsed, when everyone was running around screaming.
Sure.
And I would go to panels, because I had never been to a convention before, and I went to all the industry panels and realized just how you realize they had no idea what was going on and just how out of control everything was. And, like, it started as a joke of, oh, ha, ha, I could do this in a costume and make more sense. But ultimately, the real reason is, apart from that, you know, I like V and everything, I am annoyed that, in Ava fandom at least, a lot of the current experts are just whoever happened to be in the office a couple of years ago. I don't want to name names because I don't want to sound like I'm yelling at people. But the problem is, a lot of people just get invited back year after year based on the strength of their name alone. And, like, when I've heard what they say, it's really, like, silly things, right? So I basically said, I'm going to turn that on its head and as a walking parody of that, that I can be this no-name guy you can't even see wearing a mask and then run a mature lecture, you know, PowerPoint lecture on these are things Hideaki Anno said. These are things we know from the guidebooks. Look how rational this is. Ava isn't this complicated show no one can understand. It actually makes a lot of sense. It's just that, you know, did anyone pause to think maybe it's just that the original set of people we asked to keep coming back to explain it are bad at explaining it and we should get new people? They're just the same people come in year after year based on the strength of their name. So that, and Zach, how many other Ava personalities, website people, commentators, experts have you invited on ANNcast? Ever?
Well, it. I've only been doing the show about a year.
Fair enough.
And you know,
how many have you mentioned during your Q&As?
Not really that many. It doesn't really come up that often, to be honest with you.
People need dramatic examples to shock them out of apathy.
Okay.
I could not do this as just a man.
But you,
I'm a symbol. So I said I'm going to do something crazy, like ha ha, wear a costume for shock value to grab your attention. And it worked because you're mentioning me in your Q&A all the time for the multiple weeks on this show, and now here I am. This was the reason I wore the V costume, was to get to this moment talking to you, to get your attention. I'm not going to keep doing that because, you know, it's hard to communicate in a costume. I'm going to switch out of that soon enough. But that
okay, because that was my next suggestion, because right now, In all honesty, right now you are a clown, and you have to get rid of the costume. People regard you as a joke. You've got to ditch it.
How loyal is a hungry dog?
Please don't do this.
No, seriously, if I have the answers and the so-called experts in a suit and tie don't, who do you think the fans are going
they're
to
not,
follow?
They're not so-called experts. You know, part of your problem is you're picking fights.
Damn right I'm picking a fight. Otherwise, it's let's all play nice and let the crazy people still give their silly theories and stuff. The system is broken and we need to fix it.
The system for what is broken? Understanding Neon Genesis Evangelion? Really?
Yes.
There's a system and that's really important?
Why do you think it's 15 years on and no one understands it?
Well, I think a lot of people understand it. It's, if you why don't you have this much passion for things that really do matter in life, I guess, is sort of my question. You seem like a very passionate guy, and you're talking about interpreting a cartoon. I'm not saying it doesn't matter. I'm just saying you seem to have so much energy and passion for this, and it's like, but you're just arguing with other people who disagree with you about Evangelion, and it just seems... It just seems sort of weird to me. I guess I don't really get it. And the fact that you seem to have so quickly made so enemies out of virtually everyone who's ever spoken about the topic in a professional setting so quickly, it seems like it's your way or the highway on a lot of stuff. Is there anybody out there that you do agree with?
On Ava specifically?
On Evangelion specifically. Anybody out there who you would say he's not stupid or crazy or interpreting it wrong?
First off, a lot of people make fun of the dub people. I think the ADV people, like Matt Greenfield, the actual ADR director, know a lot of pragmatic things about the ADR script. I don't agree with them on everything. Just basically, they say they don't think End of Ava is the ending, and I do think it's the ending, but that's a point reasonable people can defer on. You know, like, it's things like people go, oh, they don't know anything. I've seen recorded panels they've given. They actually know quite a bit about the show because, you know, they've worked on it. But that's dubbing people in terms of actual writing experts. Well, that's a problem of just how few articles have actually been written on the show. People always go, a lot has been written about it. Actually, very little has been written. Can you name a book that's been written about Abe in English? Not that many articles. If you name them on hand, they're kind of silly. In her book, I really did like the write-up Helen McCarthy gave for Ava, because she was actually pointing out it's influenced by Ultraman. It's referencing this other thing. These were social influences on it. So I really liked what she wrote. You know, it was a two-page spread, but it was a lot more informative than some full articles I've read. That was very nice, but really, these people aren't experts. 6 years ago, they were the guy in the office who liked Ava, who had the audacity or bravery to walk up to a microphone and start ranting about it. And 6 years on, this became custom and ultimately institution. These people were never experts. No better than if someone was ranting about Lord of the Rings having something to do with anti-Vietnam stuff and marijuana and hippie stuff, which people actually said for years. Lord of the Rings fandom had to go through that transition where it became focusing on evidence and things the creator said. I do not want to fight anyone, but there are major problems, and people should try to address all these discrepancies we have.
Right, but your language, I understand what you're going for, but I think the problem here is the fact that you're approaching this as though it's a fight, as though you are really fighting, and the whole notion of revolution. All you're doing is just disagreeing about how we talk about a certain show, a TV show. And at the end of the day, this is just a TV show.
Look, Zach, we all want to change the world, but when you begin to talk about destruction, you can count us out. We're not trying to fight anyone. And we won't back down from combat on a fair and even field, but we're not going to tolerate a domination of the weak by the strong. Some of these people aren't experts. They were just able to dupe a room of 14-year-olds into thinking they knew what they were talking about by overwhelming them with information overload. This is unfair to the other fans. People deserve more than this. Fans deserve respect. Not me personally. I mean, rooms of people that want to have information on the show that doesn't resort to just wildly interpretive theory. And if trying to change it from within won't work. I'm not even talking about specific people. Over 15 years, this attitude and mentality is spread about Ava that it's about symbols or whatever you want it to be, and you can't just change that from within. You have to fundamentally change the way you think about the show.
Okay.
And the difference is, whereas Lord of the Rings took a few decades to change that, I would like to do that within a few years.
Based on your own personal interpretation of the show and how it's supposed to be talked about, how it's supposed to be viewed.
Conversely, they're just talking about their personal interpretations. Why aren't you yelling at them?
I'm not yelling at anybody, my friend. I am not yelling at a soul. Having a conversation with you.
On a certain level, it's all personal, but okay, are they any less personal interpretation than me?
No, they're not, but you seem to be under the belief that your interpretation of the show is monolithic and true, and theirs is fundamentally false.
Well, I can pick a simple binary that the creators of the show repeatedly and openly said, we never planned out the religious symbols to have any meaning. That is not our intent. And if you were explaining it to people, that is not what we were trying to tell you about. Or something basic like that. Or I don't know what.
So you're basically
there
saying...
There are certain things we should be... The difference is I'm making a recourse to authority. Just as Lord of the Rings fandom shifted to being based like almost like biblical exegesis on, did Tolkien say this? Do Balrogs have wings? Well, let's go to the text and see what Tolkien said. That's what the text said. Well, did he say anything in his letters? We should shift to focusing on not what I am saying, but on what Anno and the guidebooks are saying. And I'm not perfect. I'm not going to get it right all the time. But I'm aspiring to present Hideaki Anno's Evangelion. I might not get it right, but that's the goal. If someone can do it better than me, they're doing a better job than me. At the moment, we're not even trying to represent what these people are doing.
Okay, I'm not saying that I disagree with your take on it. I'm just saying I think your tactics... There is a reason there is a tornado of drama around you, and that's because you create it. You're the guy picking these fights. You're the guy going out there and creating the drama. I mean, that's you. And I don't think the costume helps really at all. I think people go to your panels a lot now because they know you as the guy who dresses up in the V for Vendetta costume.
No, we're phasing it out. We're phasing it out. We don't have to do that anymore. But
okay.
I mean, let's face it. Ava study was kind of considered a tired, boring topic when we started out 2 years ago. I mean, people thought everything can be said about Ava has been said, so I needed something to grab people's attention.
Right, and you sort of see yourself as sort of toppling the structure that's already there.
Which is sillier, that I'm wearing a costume and then giving an actual presentation, or the utter insanity of some of the weird interpretive stuff some of the fanboys do?
Honestly, and I gotta be completely straight with you, the fact that there is this much interest and this much discussion and this much drama surrounding a 15-year-old television show is far more interesting to me as an industry commentator than anything else. I just love the fact that all of this shit exists. I find it fascinating. I find it fun. I'm glad it's around. I'm glad you're around. I'm glad the Ava Geeks guys are around. I'm glad all of it's around. I think it's just fascinating and interesting, and there's still life. To me, it means there's still life in anime fandom. People still give a shit. People still argue. I think that's really cool. I really love it.
My group of people, at least the ones I started out with, we're just like the people that liked Ava from the Adult Swim message boards. We made our own website, and we're inviting new people in who want to come, but look, there'll be a lot of fighting. I don't want there to be fighting. Even other fandoms like Lord of the Rings had crises between the book and movie fans. That's never going to go away. But the big thing I have is, are you opposed that I'm yelling on general principle? Or your audience or everyone, I'm not just talking to you. Have you actually heard the things some of these people have said? The major ones, you know who they are.
Yeah, I have, and the fact of the matter is, like, I coming from the perspective of a somebody who, you know, my focus in school was film theory, I think it's wonderful that there's a show out there that can get that many interpretations. I've always thought that was the great thing about Evangelion, is that people can take it down so many different roads.
That is a bad thing.
That's what makes it a masterpiece, though, because
show,
it can be interpreted.
That's a good thing in every show, including Ava, that you can interpret something every way, and it's not just a monolithic, there it is. Star Wars, you can take more than one way. Lord of the Rings, there are many different varying interpretations. But with Ava, it's to the point where some people literally say that, like, some of the weird, happy, alternate universe spin-off manga is another legitimate interpretation of the show. Like, this is, like, they reimagine it. It's strange. Like, they interpret it so drastically that it no longer reflects reality. Like, people who say, Rey is this kind, warm, loving girl who wants to be my perfect girlfriend, or zany things that don't have a basis in what the actual show was. And it shifted from trying to explain Ava to trying to explain their preconceived notions using Ava as a facet to do that. I mean, for example, something I'm not particularly fond of is, like, you know how Mechademia announces their topics, like, a year in advance?
Uh-huh.
Like, Volume 7 is going to be right about Descartes. Well, was Descartes even in Ava? You could assign these meanings and even write a very good piece of analysis, but that isn't explanation. That is interpretation. We don't even have the basic fan infrastructure of, like, a Hideaki Anno biography. Basic guidebooks to the show. We're working on nothing. Just, like, watching the show and trying to guess what the creator meant based on our misinterpretations of all the cross symbols in it. Versus, why don't we just invite him to New York Anime Fest and ask him? I don't want to make my version. I want to make a recourse to what Gainax intended. And I wish we could invite them here just so they could tell us. I mean, these are living creators. They're not, like, dead authors or something.
Right. Well, and, you know, another thing that you're sort of fighting here is the fact that, you know, when Evangelion came out 15 years ago and, you know, it was released on VHS, and for a very long time, those creators were not accessible to an American audience and didn't even know they had an American audience. So you're talking about 10, 12 years of people interpreting the show in their own way without really having original intent to even look at. And so, you know, I agree with that portion of what you're doing. However, I don't agree that there's no value to the interpretations of the show by these other people, by these academics.
Okay, the other reason this is a hot-button issue is, what was the theme of Princess Mononoke? Environmentalism? Let's say environmentalism, right?
Sure. Nature good, so humans bad. Well, nature good, humans gray area. I would say.
Let's say, following what you're saying, we made some interpretation that was so drastically different from the original that never knew what Miyazaki had said on this topic and were, I don't know, not even paying attention, that they said this was an anti-environmentalist movie and that the humans were right to spread Iron Town and that nature must be subsumed.
Okay.
Would this be a valid interpretation? Would you feel upset?
No,
by
this? But that's part of what the discussion of film is. That's why we talk about the arts. If someone's really serious about their interpretation that way, and they can try to back it up with the film, you watch their interpretation, you go, okay, well, I don't agree with this. It's wacky interpretation. I think this guy missed the point of the film, or he's drawing conclusions that I just don't agree with. But you don't try and say, like, we need to build a revolution against this guy's interpretation of Princess Mononoke. Like, that's just... We're just discussing the arts here. It's not this all or nothing revolutionary
point
act.
Out that person, you know, Miyazaki specifically said the theme was environmentalism, or I'm an environmentalist. How dare you say that?
I would talk to that person in a manner that did not suggest that my interpretation is truth, and yours is a lie. Now, I agree with you. There are, you know, someone could watch Avatar and say that Avatar is a anti-environmentalist film. And that would be a completely wildly inaccurate interpretation of that film. And I would want to know how they came to that conclusion. But I would want to know why. And I would really want to hear their lecture about it, because that's a viewpoint that's fascinating to me. And, you know, part of the whole reason why discussion of the arts is so much fun is because we get to have these discussions about it. And part of the reason Evangelion is such a remembered show, it's still hugely popular, and why it's considered such a masterpiece is because it can be interpreted all these different ways. Not that all those different ways are valid, but trying to start a war over which one is right and which one isn't, or picking fights with scholars in a way that suggests you don't respect them, is just we're talking about the arts here. We're all supposed to be.
Some of these scholars are self-appointed.
Well, okay, sure.
Well, it depends on which ones you're talking about, but I don't want to get into that. It's, as I was saying with that, like Miyazaki environmentalism, the actual theme of Eva, which Hideyuki was said more than once, is don't live in a world of fantasy. Like, don't just go, I'm going to watch, what's that Train Man movie? Densha Otaku?
Densha Otaku,
yeah. Girls want to go out with me, and they won't be freaked out by all my hentai Gundam models. That's a fantasy. That would never happen. That instead of living in a world of fantasy, like Shinji zoning out with his headphones, he should accept the real world as it is, not curl up in a ball, not like if this was the Matrix. He shouldn't take the blue pill. He should take the red pill. At the end of the story, he says, you know what? I had a rough life, and the real world's an apocalyptic hellscape now, but this happens really fast. He goes, it had an inherent realness to it that gave life value, so I'm going to go back and stop trying to live in fantasy, and I'm going to go and face life as it comes.
Okay.
So the actual message of the show was face what you're dealt with, as opposed to living in, believing whatever you want. That was the actual specific message of this show, and that's why I'm annoyed. More than if someone in Mononoke was saying it's anti-environmentalist. I have seen academic articles saying the point of the show was existentialist, pro-existentialist, that there's a thousand realities and it's good to live in fantasy, when the actual message of the show was don't interpret things how you want them, accept life as it comes. That's so ironic that we turned Eva into this Rorschach test where you can see whatever you want. That must have been kind of funny then, as a warped game of Mad Libs.
But even the best art, some of the best art does that. The best art does that.
And does it still reflect what made that art so valuable in the first place?
Absolutely it does. Absolutely it does. Look at any surrealist painting. Any surrealist painting. You cannot really...
I'm talking about the works of J.R.R. Tolkien here, or Miyazaki, or Tezuka.
I understand what you're saying, but I say there's value in that. I say there's value in that. Absolutely, there's value in having a whole huge world of opinion about it. Anything that motivates people to talk about the arts, to really discuss things that matter to them. I'm just saying that I think there's value to it. And what you're talking about...
There is value in the multiple discussions and variant interpretations. Like, we're still reinterpreting Lord of the Rings all the time. I'm an old dyed-in-the-wool Lord of the Rings fan.
Yes, and I think the listeners will get that.
The specific example I use, and I'm adamant on this, is we're living more or less... Ava fandom now is like Lord of the Rings fans in the 60s, when people were free to say it's about Vietnam, even though it was written in 54 by a British World War I veteran, that it was about... that Sauron was the draft, or, you know, things that really had no basis in reality, but would we say, well, it was fun for them to interpret that? Well, it didn't really convey what the original message was. You could, from a certain standpoint, say, isn't it interesting that they drastically reinterpreted it that way? I've seen pictures of, I wish I could have seen the whole thing, academic panels talking about how, isn't it amazing that people have reinterpreted Rei Ayanami in so many different ways, like the fan art and the merchandise, where she's like a commando or riding a motorcycle or wearing a kimono, where it's like, this isn't the original anymore. If we're making an adaptation of, you know, live-action Ava, but, you know, even if that never happens, just talking about Ava itself, wouldn't we want it to be close to what the author meant? I mean, look at what happened with live-action Last Airbender. Was Shyamalan's version of Last Airbender a legitimate interpretation? Would you ever defend that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely I would. What he did was sort of haphazardly slap together scenes that he felt his kids felt were important from the TV show. I mean, that movie's a fucking joke. It's not an artistic it's not an artistic interpretation. It's an attempt to squash an entire season of a cartoon into 90 minutes without...
90 minutes, because all my movies are 90 minutes long, and that's what I'm comfortable. It should have been 3 hours at least. I mean, that's just insane.
It's a terrible, terrible movie. But it is, in terms of being an interpretation of something, it's not like he called it The Last Airbender and it was actually excerpts from the Ollie North trials. You know, it was, it was an interpretation of the story, like it or not. You can't really put things into these sort of binary good or bad.
I'm approaching this like a book adaptation. Probably that's just because I'm wired, but we should try to focus on what be faithful to the original. And it's as if, as North American anime fans, we skip the step and we just interpret it however we want. And frankly, Anno doesn't care about North American fans. I don't fault him. He shouldn't have to. They don't really care about how we're misinterpreting it over here. And I do not think it is a good thing. Are we trying to even... Is the goal to explain the show or to express ourselves? Is the goal to say, you know, like you're saying, when someone comes up with an elaborate explanation of this is how I think, I don't know, something about how Kabbalah and Rei work out in the feminine or some interpretive essay. Eventually you go, this is so far removed from the original. How can you present this as explanation anymore? This is your opinion. Can we at least make a distinction between the two? There are always going to be interpretive essays. There's still interpretive essays about Lord of the Rings. But we kind of know what was going on. There are people who walk in and hug me after my panels because they said no one ever explained this to us before. Just laid out, this is what the plot is like. This is what the creator said. That people think it's the show no one understands. And by and large, we made that. We made it the show no one can understand. If you sat down and just maturely, and this is going to take months, if not years, sit down, read the guidebooks, focus on the creator statements, it's an entirely different paradigm that I'm arguing for. I don't want to make up another interpretation, and I am not going to applaud if you make up some other really complicated yet increasingly elaborate and creative interpretation. Is this Hideaki Anno's message? I'm a fan of his original message, which was, and I know I'm talking fast, he was saying, wow, we turned into Shinji, Asuka, and Misato in the Great Recession in Japan. We turned into these people who run away from reality and escape to fantasy. It was all these, and he was also deconstructing the giant robot genre, which was another fantasy genre which people used for escapism. It was a criticism of escapism, and we responded to it with escapism.
Okay, right. Well, see, you know, I don't necessarily really agree with that as sort of a monolithic interpretation of the show. Honestly, it's not monolithic,
and there is room for debate, and always will be, but it's... I'm approaching this in a tone of a Lord of the Rings fan who would simply tell someone, this was never about Vietnam. If you're running a panel about Lord of the Rings in Vietnam, we are going to try and make you stop, because this is just abusing the trust other
fans. That's where I say you are really doing a disservice.
Because How am I doing a disservice?
Because the arts are out there specifically to do things like spark debate and get people thinking and get people talking. And if you're telling somebody, I don't care for your personal interpretation of this show, no matter how wild it is, and I'm going to try to, and I'm going to tell you that you shouldn't express that. I'm going to tell you that you shouldn't talk to people who do want to listen to you about this particular television show that I'm really passionate about. That's where I think you're on the wrong track. Sell your version. Don't try to shut everybody else down.
There is a difference between saying it online, in person, and in books and on the panel circuit, because people believe what they hear at panels and in books.
So fundamentally, you're more upset that more people are listening to these guys than they are to you.
Or someone like me, that these people get so much attention. Some of them, I doubt, have ever read the guidebooks or know things Hideki Anno has said. We have people who are, if you're writing a book, if you're writing a panel, or anything like that, you have a responsibility to the fans that come there and put their trust in you to try to explain it to them. And all we're responding with is partisan bickering about various theories, and I think this, or it's become so removed from actually addressing the problems we face that it is harming the fan base more than it is helping it. We should get back to the core issues instead of just one-upmanship over personal theory. We deserve actual discourse instead of these personal feuds, these personal discussions. It doesn't reflect what's going on the ground anymore.
But you're the guy. You're the guy that's picking these fights.
I'm picking a fight because I'm trying to restore sanity.
Okay, that's a little circular. We shouldn't be having all these partisan debates, but I'm going to keep picking personal fights with people who...
I am not picking a personal fight on the level of I like my interpretation more. I am not arguing my interpretation. I am arguing that we should base what we are understanding on things Anno said and on the guidebooks, actual official materials, as opposed to just what I think.
Don't you
if
think
someone
that
else
part
can
of
argue them better, it's like, does Tom Shippey's view of Lord of the Rings represent all of Lord of the Rings? No, but he tries to reflect what Tolkien actually meant.
Okay, right, and he's one voice in many, and don't you think those
he's
many...
He's not one voice in many. He's a respected researcher who is backed up by evidence.
I'm not saying that his opinion is somehow less valid or just as valid as the guy who thinks that Lord of the Rings is about, I don't know, food policy or something like that. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that don't you think part of the reason that Lord of the Rings culture remained vibrant and stayed alive is because there were all these voices?
No.
You could have these discussions?
Much like biblical exegesis, like do Balrogs have wings? That was based on arguing points in Tolkien's text. There were still many lively debates. What is Tom Bombadil? Where do elves go when they die? Things like that. The internal debates in Lord of the Rings fandom aren't based so much on, this is my opinion because I feel this way, but based on, this is how I have worked out my citations and built an argument that this is what I think he intended. I mean, Zach, are you arguing for a system where one theory or another is believed in more because the proponents of it believe in it very strongly? If someone says, I think Rey represents the feminine Kabbalah symbol or something, that it should be given prominence because the people that believe in that believe it very strongly or can argue down the rest of us without any citations or evidence to back them up to show the creators intended that.
No, I don't think that. Here's what I think. I think that you're talking about a piece of art that is something that should be celebrated because it can be interpreted so subjectively. I want to hear the lecture from the lady who thinks that Rey is a symbol of Kabbalah. I want to hear that lecture. I want to know where it is she's getting that from. I really want to know what her points are. I find that fascinating. And anyone who is seriously interested in a critical discussion of the arts and is interested in the flow of ideas and is interested in seriously interpreting things and really just wants to get into the meat of just loving the shit out of the arts is open to all those weird, wacky ideas and wants to hear them. Do you have any idea how many different interpretations of Battleship Potemkin I've heard? I've heard a shitload of them. And they're all very interesting, and some of them aren't valid, and some of them are. But they're all very interesting. And the reason that that film endures, and the reason that it's respected by the film community still, is because you can look at it through so many different lenses. And there's so many different things you can get out of it. And I've always looked at Evangelion as this thing where there's so many different things you can get out of this. And trying to smash that and say, no, you can only get what the creators said. To me, I don't agree with that.
Ava, why don't you do this with Cowboy Bebop or another much more realistic?
Because Evangelion tried some really artistic shit.
No, that is kind of a double standard. Why is it only this? Why aren't you applying all of these things to Cowboy Bebop? Because Ava was, narrative-wise, loose enough that people could get away with making all these crazy interpretations. Mainstream things like, you know, even Akira doesn't have this much stuff as Ava does.
Oh, it did for a while, my friend.
Yeah, it did for a while due to the volume and everything, but other shows...
It did for a very long time. Akira was, for a very long time, the show you couldn't understand, and it was too confusing, and everyone had their own ideas, and countless essays were written about the real meaning of Akira and what it really meant about Japan. I mean, actually, Akira is a really good parallel to what you're talking about here. And you know what? All those discussions, all they did was keep public interest in Akira alive for decades. That's all it did.
Actually, all the Ava stuff has done is convinced everyone it's this art house show that normal people aren't smart enough to understand.
Really, actually, I think what it did is that it made Evangelion 1.11 Funimation's top-selling disc for the year. Because it still is. And it's a 15-year-old show. And that
14-year-olds buy the show because of lectures on a college level about symbolism they could never hope to understand because they inherently understand the character drama.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think our argument boils down to this. I think what you're complaining about is actually keeping the show's fandom and interest in the show alive. I think it really is.
In the sense that if we have this crazy interpretive stuff going on, it'll drive away common fans. Look, Lord of the Rings fandom, people's heads would be exploding if you said it doesn't matter what Tolkien says. It's my artistic vision. I'm interpreting it. I am trying to get at the historical basis of what were they trying to talk about. Just as if this was Barefoot Gen, I'd be talking about the Japanese experience in World War II or Grave of the Fireflies. Why are we doing Ava differently? Why is there a double standard?
Because you're not just saying that. You're saying that not only am I saying we should be looking at it this way, but that every other interpretation is worthless and that these people are jokes and that we shouldn't be listening to them.
I'm referring to a group of interpretations. As I would say, any interpretation of War of the Rings that seriously thinks it's about Vietnam is a joke. Yes, I think a group of other views based on that the religious symbols mean something didn't do the research. I don't think I'm going to write one book and this is the way to look at Ava or something like that. I'm trying to argue for a return to let's focus on what the creator actually meant. Because I don't think we ever did that. We skipped that entirely. We, as you said, focused on finding our own artistic expressions and debating them, never actually tried to sit down and analyze it, and ultimately acted surprised when we couldn't understand it. There's a thing on TV Tropes called Everyone is Jesus in Purgatory. You know, publish or perish, the whole thing that some people just put in the symbols and interpretation to death. This hasn't helped, and it hasn't helped the common fans either, or the noobs trying to come in. This just made it so complicated that people don't think they can understand it. It made it inaccessible. And ultimately, does it help companies like Funimation or Section 23 to have shows that officially only a college-educated person in a film class could understand? That the 14-year-olds it was marketed to originally can't truly appreciate all the artistic nuance and symbolism?
Okay.
Or should we be doing my thing, which is, let's say, look, this was a social commentary on Japan in the 90s and the recession. They worked in a lot of character drama and a lot of psychological analysis as well. And this is what the show was really about. By the way, did you read the current issue of Mechademia?
It hasn't come in yet. My review copy's in the way.
I can see it on Project News. It's interesting because they made three differing reviews of Rebuild of Ava. And one was the thing I'm upset with, where it was saying Ava was about the narrative device. It's like a fight that they showed in flashback originally, now they just show linearly, and he said this changed what made Ava Ava. Whereas a second review said, kind of my position, that I always thought it was a character drama, so I don't think this window dressing being changed really affected the core of what Ava is. that all of this, the Japanese creators openly said we didn't understand these symbols, we just threw them in. That they don't know about Kabbalah or Christianity symbols at all. They just threw it in randomly. They have said this. So if we are analyzing it, we're talking about what it means to us. So that's like reading Lord of the Rings and not knowing what World War I was. That this is what shaped it. But still, we were able to understand that on a certain level by analyzing and trying to view it from Tolkien's perspective. I'm not saying my view. I'm trying to say, let's take a step back and focus on the evidence, on things the creator said. And if we're just interpreting it, we're never going to get to a real answer. And ultimately, for the companies like Funimation ADV, this will make it more accessible. They'll get more people to buy their shows. And this is what they want. Otherwise, we're making it into an ultra-niche fan.
Okay. Well, there's a couple of holes in what you're saying here. I think, well, personally, from my perspective, the fact that people can interpret it so many ways is what makes it beautiful, is what makes it a piece of art. I believe that absolutely. It shouldn't be just what Anno Hideaki said in an interview or in a guidebook or something. It should speak to any number of people. That's fundamentally what art does. It speaks to people. They interpret it in their own way.
Why only Ava? Because
it's not only Ava. There's plenty of other anime films that do the same thing. But Evangelion's a special case because it was a TV show that was so sort of vague artistically that it could be interpreted in those number of ways. All I'm saying is I think that's a good thing. We don't get things like that anymore. I mean, shows with sort of vague storylines that could sort of be ambiguously interpreted, kind of the closest thing we've had lately is Eden of the East, and everyone just kind of dismissed it because they thought the ending sucked, and it had some shitty episodes in the middle. Evangelion's sort of endured as this piece of, it's got that real sort of artistic edge to it that people can really look at it and say, okay, well, what is this supposed to be about? I think that is vastly more valuable. That's vastly more valuable than a sort of, well, here's what it means and let's get the 15-year-olds into it. I think that's more valuable. And I don't think you're going to get 15-year-olds into a 15-year-old TV show. I really don't.
How much artistic merit does it have? How much peer review is going on when you're just saying what you feel in a consequence-free environment where you can interpret it any way without possibility of failure?
First of all, you're exaggerating a little bit. Most of these interpretations that you're talking about, they're not like these wild-eyed things that have absolutely no basis in the show. I mean, any artistic interpretation,
The creator has said the religious symbols didn't mean anything. That they, as Japanese people, just think these mean different things to Japanese people.
Okay.
So they were interpreting them as an American would, and this did indeed drastically change what people thought the series was about.
I understand that. However, okay, so some of the crazier interpretations that you're talking about where it's like this show is all about the religious symbolism.
You mean the very people who get to write academic journals?
You shouldn't use that phrase, get to. You really shouldn't.
The ones that have written magazine articles on this show, academic articles on this show, and the DVD.
I've read the articles that you're talking about, and they don't have it's not like they lack merit. I mean, a lot of them are just explaining the symbols that you're seeing. A lot of them don't really tie them into the show directly, especially Taliesin's stuff. Taliesin's stuff tends to directly just explain what the symbols are because he researched what the symbols were. That's really what he was doing there. I've read that article. I used to work for that magazine, by the way.
Some of the crazier stuff was the stuff that tries to assign meaning to it, and I respect that Taliesin at least didn't try to make up an explanation. He was just saying this is what this symbol is. But I think that was really focusing on the wrong thing.
Okay, but that's in your interpretation, focusing on the wrong thing. But a lot of people in the West especially were very curious about what all those religious symbols mean. So isn't it helpful to have a guide? Isn't it helpful to say, here's what this means, and just explain what the symbol is? Isn't that helpful?
That just distracted fans with superfluous information that they didn't really need to know the core story of what was going on.
Okay,
I could write entire books on the flora and fauna of Middle-earth, but it wouldn't really affect what the storyline of Frodo is. You know, it's focusing on minor details that happen to be in there. That you could write an article on why do
people do write books about the flora and fauna of Middle Earth.
Symbols seem alien to Japanese people. Why do they have an air of the exotic to them? As opposed to, this is specifically what this Kabbalah symbol meant, and I'm fairly sure it must have had some kind of inner meaning. Which gets increasingly, sometimes some of the later stuff drags in things that were barely even in the show. And I really think this was focusing on the wrong thing. I don't blame them when originally, you know, if I was there in the late 90s, I might have been with this too, that they didn't know that Anno said this. But he said it now. We know that he doesn't think, that Anno doesn't think the religious symbols meant anything. Why are we still focusing on them? I think it's out of habit.
I guess that that's true. However, I think modern anime fandom, especially now, is more focused on the films, the new films, which really don't have a lot of that stuff in it. They have a little bit of
yes.
it.
Yes. And are they still Eva? Yeah, because they cut out the stuff that wasn't really part of the show in the first place. If it was so essential, why did they cut it out? I know that's a poor logical argument, but was it essential to the creators if in a remake they decided it wasn't worth including because it confused people the first time?
Okay.
Look, I realize we're at odds over this. It's just, functionally, I think it should be based on what the creators... I don't think it's the word of law that we can't interpret it into different frames and analyze it and compare other things to it, but it's a world where you can say things that directly contradict basic statements a living author has made, and there is no consequence.
But people do that all the time in every aspect of literature analysis, film analysis, especially in film analysis, especially in films where the director is long dead. You know, I think that's what keeps people interested in the arts and interested in, you know, discussing the arts, is because things can be interpreted so many ways. I think that that's a beautiful thing. I don't think that's anything that should be
squashed. A handful of academics interested in it who dominated discussion while pushing out common fans who said, by saying they weren't intelligent enough to understand it, when really they were just saying whatever came into their heads.
Okay.
It is not, this system is not working out. We need to, look, if nothing else, I think everyone is capable of understanding Eva. The answers are there. There is still, there's all, I'm not trying to say I'm against interpretation on any level, even Lord of the Rings is interpretation. We can make this show easily understandable to other people, and what we want to change is the attitude that, you know, don't you think there's a correlation between I can interpret Eva any way I want and, I ultimately couldn't find out what Eva was about? Because you're asking yourself as opposed to trying to do the research.
Don't you think you can go about what you're doing without being so combative about it?
How can you peacefully fit in, dear God, you are crazy people who were making up that Ray is crazy fan art at worst, or at best, wow, you haven't written any articles of merit on this. You're just talking about what you feel. I mean, look at the next two issues, not this drastic. Look at the next two issues of Mechademia. They're scheduled to focus on fan works, cosplay, fan art, fan creation. These are things you can research, I mean, from an anthropology perspective, but if some of their articles are articles on Eva fan art of Ray, you know, even legitimate ones or inventive ones that are have merit as a thing about fans' artistic activities, how is that explaining Eva? You're studying fans as opposed to studying the work itself.
But the fandom surrounding Evangelion is just as interesting.
We never explained the show in the first place. 15 years went by and everyone just assumed, well, we must have gotten to it eventually. We didn't exhaust this. We just got tired of it and didn't look up the guidebooks that were there the whole time.
You really seem to be thinking that there's... I think you're kind of confusing the notion of what you perceive everyone thinks about Eva with the truth about what actually happens here, which is, it's kind of a miracle anyone still gives a shit about this show. It is kind of a miracle that anyone still cares. It's a 15-year-old show. No one gives a shit about Escaflowne at this point, and that came out at the same time.
I like Escaflowne. There's
no, okay, but no one gives a shit about it in the same way that they still give a shit about Evangelion. In the same way that you can still go to a crane machine and pull Asuka toys out of a crane machine. People still really give a shit about Evangelion. And it's kind of a miracle that that's happened. That there's a show that's that old.
Because of the interpretations, or because these are some of the best written characters? By that logic, why did the the characters in the works of the Bronte sisters resonate throughout history, because they were well-written characters that felt like real people even years or decades after they were written. That people like Shinji, Asuka, and Rei because they are so flawed and reflect the problems they have in their own lives.
So you're ignoring anime's history in the West and what actually has managed to remain popular. You're ignoring all of that, and you're going to the Bronte sisters?
No,
I'm talking about what is realistically
fiction,
remained.
Literature, TV, fantasy, things from the Kirk and Spock from the 60s, or the original Star Wars, things that are 30 years old can be still popular if they had great characters.
Yes, but we're not talking about Western franchises. I'm talking about anime. Evangelion is a miracle that it's still popular here. It's a really old show. They keep reviving it. Well, actually,
yes,
they don't keep reviving it. They revived it last year, and it somehow managed to be one of the best-selling discs on the year of the year.
Most shows that old aren't that popular, but I'm not arguing that.
No shows that old are that popular, except for maybe Cowboy Bebop, which has been off the market for a while.
I'm saying, why was it that popular? Was Cowboy Bebop popular because of its narrative structure? No, no one could ever do a hack job with all this interpretive stuff on it. Cowboy Bebop's still popular because people really like the characters.
It's popular for a different reason.
What?
It's popular for a different reason.
The version of Ava that we are promoting, which we think is legitimate in its own right, is that Ava was popular for the message Hideaki Anno was trying to present and the characters he made and the psych issues he worked in. And if you want clear answers about the show, or at least pointing in the right direction of, look, this is what we think the creator said, and trying to give you a clear answer instead of saying, what do you think, please come to us. So.
But it sounds like you're going to fucking reject anybody's interpretation that doesn't fall in line with yours.
Well, by fall in line, does someone else's interpretation cite Hideaki Anno?
Do they have to?
Do they say things that directly contradict statements a living author has made about their own works?
I don't know. How full of shit do you think Hideaki Anno can be? Because I know he can be kind of full of shit. I've read lots of his interviews.
Okay, how about Suramaki, the guy that made Furikuri? Satomoto, or multiple Gainax members have said the religious symbols didn't mean anything. And yes, sometimes it's hard to piece together exactly what they meant. Let's not even get into, was End of Ava the real ending or the TV ending? Because I think they're embarrassed about talking about what they really feel with that. But just religious symbols, let's focus on that. A lot of them have said very clearly they never meant anything by it.
Well, and I think that's a broadly taken interpretation. I see that more often, certainly, than I do any other. Most of the time, you know, most of the time when I see discussion about Evangelion happening, the prevailing wisdom is that the religious symbolism didn't really mean anything. I see that a lot.
Zach, but you or I, or frankly some of the better read members of anime fandom who go onto blogs every day and interact with people, like casual fans are just sitting around watching at home, occasionally catching a DVD commentary or things they see at a panel run by someone who is giving your own interpretation. We read around enough to get an informed opinion. Not everyone is so fortunate.
Well, okay, so.
Okay, let me be blunt, because the analogy I'm trying to draw is like TV talking heads who argue their own little political interpretations to the point it no longer affects reality, just bickering back and forth in a sort of crossfire, if you will, are denying the common fans who aren't well-informed an essential discourse about the facts on the ground that they really need.
Okay.
And just debating our own interpretations back and forth, they need to be at least grounded. Like, there are bitter debates about things in other fandoms, but they're still based in evidence. So what I'm saying is you've made some points of, am I just saying we should throw out every interpretation ever? Well, I don't know if I'm the one to judge that. All I know is there's one or two specific ones, the religion stuff at least, which I think we've been focusing on too much. And you know, as one man, I can't shut down people interpreting Ava forever, because that's always going to happen. What I can't, that was happening before me, that'll happen after me. What I can say is my little fan site, revolutionofevangelion.org, we're trying to present, look, this is what we think Hideaki Anno meant and what Gainax meant as far as we can tell by looking through the guidebooks. Here's all these creator statements we found from New Type magazine. Obviously, I'm still putting all this together, but to try to promote this is Hideki Anno's Ava. You know, it was a group project. So it's like, this is Sadamoto Anno, this is Gainax's Ava. I want to know what they thought about their own work. And this fixation on fan interpretations here, even if valid, has for the moment crowded out the focus on what Anno meant. I mean, even today, subconsciously, you would never really put forward an interpretation about Miyazaki being anti-environmentalist or James Cameron's Avatar being anti-environmentalist, because we can tell what the creators intended because they told us. I don't think there's going to be, if we really get the word out about this is what Anno said about his own work, I think the interpretations will be a bit more grounded no matter what we do on our own after that. We want to try to focus things on what the creators actually said, because Ava actually makes coherent sense if you just sit down and read through the guidebooks and stuff, as you would in any other fandom. I think this focus by all the artistic elements, you know, which is great, ultimately kind of harmed the show, and we got away from what it was really about. This made it too diffuse, made it inaccessible. It's a joke that no one understands Ava. It's a common joke. We want to make it more accessible. This is what fans deserve. While we're at it, we want to kind of crack down on crazy porn fan art and stuff, which, like, that's not what the show is about. We really need it. This isn't 4chan. It's not about internet culture. It's about the it is internet culture. I mean, it's a forum, but no more of the craziness, guys. That has to stop. Like, no more.
But you're never going to be able to control that. Not ever. Not ever.
Not with that attitude, you won't.
Even saying, no, you won't. That's like, no more of the, no more crazy porn Evangelion fan art. Good fucking luck.
No, I can't get rid of porn fan art. Like, Lord of the Rings can't get rid of slash fan art.
Well, I don't think they want to. It's part of what keeps the fandom alive.
In my little corner of who's fandom, in my little corner of the internet, I want a nice place where people can come and not have to deal with all that stuff if you don't want to.
Okay, and haven't you created that?
What?
Haven't you created that?
Yes, I'm.
Or is it not popular enough right now for you to consider that you've created that?
Well, work in progress. I mean, I'm trying, but let's no more of the crazy online stuff. On top of that, just the elitism of, well, we all did it in the late 90s as a group, and this is the experience of that. You know, that's good, that's fun. I envy people who can say I read Lord of the Rings when it came out year by year in the 50s. Like, that's unimaginable to me, but or like people who saw Star Wars in the theater, the original series as it came out, but there's going to be new fans, and we have to help guide them and explain things to them instead of forcing our own opinions on them. I think Ava is a great commentary on how we live now and our times and real people with real problems, and it's about, like, people losing hope during the recession and everything, just how nuts we are. And ultimately, are we going to self-medicate on a bunch of anime, or are we going to embrace light? I think that is a wonderful message, one I admire immensely that Anno is putting forward, that Gainax is putting forward, and I want to help spread the word that look at all the evidence. This is the show they were trying to show, that it was this really realistic deconstruction of giant robot. It wasn't all of this interpretive stuff. And if other people have the right to their opinions, we have the right to say, look, this is what the creator said. I don't have the power to be some goon squad shutting down panels all across the country.
No, you don't.
I can't do that. I'm just hoping to spread the word, to spread enough public awareness of this issue, that just as today, no convention would run a Tolkien and Vietnam panel or the anti-environmentalism in Miyazaki with a straight face, that people might think twice about running Shinji is Jesus in Hell and Purgatory, like the TV tropes, as a thing, that people might start to go, maybe it's not really about that. Maybe I should focus on what they were trying to say a little more. Just as we did with Lord of the Rings. Because that was a fandom that was in a really bad way at first and then fixed itself.
Okay. Well, I think you would be better served by presenting your message in a way that didn't necessarily seem like you were trying to shut down other discussion or being quite as dismissive of other viewpoints, and maybe cut out the internet theatrics a little bit, because
when Tolkien fandom was trying to shut down the hippie people who say, I know I keep saying hippie fans, it's a phrase we have in the 60s in America, so it's about the Vietnam draft. How could they tolerate that in serious academic discussion? Did they tolerate that? Or did they say, look, that didn't happen. Please stop coming here. I missed out on a lot of these fights. I wasn't alive in the 70s for when this slow transition happened. But it's the difference between getting a batshy animated Lord of the Rings and an accurate Jackson Lord of the Rings. Well, fairly accurate.
Sort of, yeah.
You know, within artistic license, but, you know, really nutty, like, you seriously think it's like this? So, I think fans deserve, you know, we've been doing what you're talking about for 15 years now. Might as well try my version. Might as well try this way of let's try and focus on what Anno said.
Except that you're never going to get it to the point where, like, you're at every con, and you're considered to be the gold standard of Evangelion discussion, which it feels like that's kind of what you're aiming for, is to be the new go-to guy. You know, like, we want to talk about Evangelion, better talk to the guy who used to dress in a V for Vendetta costume.
Well, like, if not me, then who? I tried to find... There are no Ava experts on any level. People just assume there must be someone in charge somewhere or people who know what they're talking about. And
I think inside your little fandom, sure, but not outside of it. Not outside of it. Not at all. Nobody cares who's in charge. There's no one in charge of any fandom. Who's in charge of Hetalia fandom? I'll tell you. Charlene.
The model I'm using is the one.
Charlene at Funimation is in charge of Hetalia fandom. That's who's in charge.
The functional model I'm using is the OneRing.net. Like, they don't dominate Lord of the Rings. Very active, visible force within Lord of the Rings fandom, setting up panels at major conventions, which are more or less synchronized across the country, to convey more or less the same information to major audiences. I, as one man, can't just crisscross the Eastern Seaboard running Religia and Ava panels. But I can set up franchises where basically, if you live near a con and you believe in all of our principles, we'll send you the convention kit, and then you get to be our little regional con person. We've already done this in regional cities across the United States, and we're spreading next year.
Okay.
That is the plan.
And Evangelion continues to be the most interesting fandom out there. Wow.
Look, Zach, 5 years ago, I was a random nobody watching this off of Adult Swim in my dorm room. Now I'm running convention panels, I'm talking to you, I'm running a fan site. Sky's limit. Zach, with Ava, all things are possible.
And continues to be so, yes.
So,
I mean, fans have been arguing about that show since forever.
So, like I said, we have some things in the works which you'll be seeing, but I think it's time for a change and to just restart over again, because if we didn't understand the show after 15 years doing what we were doing, maybe we should try something new now that Rebuild is here. So we've had a revival and we've had a rebuild. Now we have the revolution of Evangelion.org.
Yes, people know the website.
I know, I'm plugging off it. People deserve to be able to understand Ava, and I think it's within the grasp of anyone to be able to understand.
Honestly,
and this will make Funimation 80 and Section 23 happier because then more people will buy it. And if it contributes to the anime industry recovering eventually, all the better for everyone. I know that my position isn't without controversy, but in the words of Tracy Jordan, there comes a time when you have to choose to do what is right instead of what is wrong, even when doing what is wrong is a whole lot easier.
Yeah. You're still just talking about interpreting a television show.
We do this thing not because it is permitted. We do it because we have to.
All right, enough. I can't take any more quotes.
Oh, come on, that's how I communicate.
I understand. But
thank you for letting me on your show, Zach, to talk about this, just as I think, you know, it's a major issue. Are we as fans allowed to interpret things so differently from the creators that they no longer reflect it, and there's something that we're saying on our own?
There's no allowed or not allowed, and when it comes to discussion of art, there's no not allowed. You can interpret you can interpret it however you want. I'm a big fan of I'm a huge fan of surrealist art, and that is some of the most subjective shit.
Other people smarter than me are probably going to be debating a lot more, but just I think there comes a point when we change it so much it's not even Ava anymore, and we're not addressing the core thing.
Sure,
and
I just
change.
I think that there's enough voices out there to where you know, having those crazy abstract interpretations of it, just that's not a dangerous thing. That's all. Okay, so we got to wrap up. Okay, man. Well, thank you. Thanks for coming on. I think this is the most I've ever really argued with somebody on the podcast. It's been an experience.
I hope I raised some points without drowning out. They're just food for thought, you know?
Hey, no, I love it. I love to argue. it's always fun for me. And you know what? At the end of the day, what I really want to say, and what's really important here, is that when we argue about this kind of stuff, it's all good-natured. We're just trying to have a debate.
Yes.
And that is, yes, to me, that is the most important thing that we can walk away from something like this, just saying, good debate, man. And that was a good debate, and I enjoyed talking to you. So thank you much.
Thank you. Abe is in the theaters. All's right with the world.
Yeah, all right. God damn it.